Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush, Friday Interview Edition. And this is a rare two-parter because it was just such a great conversation and such a long conversation. And it divided up nicely into two pieces. So if you listened last week to Brett Gelman and David Harbour and Joe Keery and I having a great, great talk about art and movies and Stranger Things, hope you enjoyed that. Here we are with part two, where we talk about the great independent film from the mid-90s, Big Night, starring Tony Shalhoub and Stanley Tucci and Ian Holm and Isabella Rossellini and Minnie Driver. Such a wonderful movie. Weirdly, Mark Anthony is in this movie. We talk about that a little bit. And all these guys had great respect and love for this film, as do I. And so we get a lot of good discussion out of this one. So I hope you enjoyed part one. And here we go with part two with Joe Keery, David Harbour, and Brett Gelman and me on Big Night. Well, guys, should we talk Big Night?
Yeah, let's talk. Yeah.
Is this going to be like a four-hour podcast?
No.
Oh, first, I got to pull up this photo.
Edit all this stuff out.
Check out this photo. Okay, you guys all know. I showed this to David earlier.
I love that you were telling me that you weren't going to show this photo because we're on a podcast.
Listen, I can't not show you,
though,
in real
life. And no
one
can see this
photo. What is the photo? Is it you with Tony Shalhoub?
No, you know Tony Shalhoub in the movie? Can you picture how he looks?
Oh, yeah.
Look at this character from Lady and the Tramp.
Oh, yeah.
Is that not like exactly? It's like one of the cooks that served them spaghetti.
That's primo.
It's pretty much, I bet he saw that and was like, this is kind of what I'm going to base the character off of, is this small, you know, animated Lady and the Tramp character.
I mean, that's and then speaking of greatest actors, that guy.
Tony Shalhoub.
I got his number surreptitiously today. I want to call him so bad.
I had him in here.
Oh, you did? Okay.
He's a friend of a friend of mine. And went to New York and was able to interview him separately from his wife, Brooke, who is in one of my favorite Alto movies, Days of Heaven. And so I got to talk to Brooke. But his Tony is great, first of all. You should totally call him.
And, no, I know him. I know him, yeah.
Oh, okay. And he would – he picked The Sting.
The Sting is
such
a great movie.
It was a
what
fun
a duo.
Conversation.
What a duo, those two. Oh my God.
Right?
Such
ridiculous.
It's like incredible. Just unfair. They're just like the.
Well, and also what? Robert Shaw, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Robert Shaw is great in that movie.
Yeah.
And what's her name? And
Catherine
Ross. Brennan.
Brennan. That's Butch Cassidy.
Okay.
Who's, and then and Charles Durning.
Yeah.
Man.
As
lots
the cop
great.
Or whatever. And then there's even the guy who's the radio operator who's been in everything, like the older guy. It reminds me a little bit of
That character actor.
Right.
Yeah.
What is
they're coming down the pike.
The horse race guy. Yeah.
I mean, Newman and Redford, it's just ridiculous. Those guys look like that.
I were still that funny and charming.
And
I played Tony's nemesis in this short-lived sitcom a few years ago.
Oh, really? Tony Shalhoub.
That's so fun.
I played like his nemesis, and I was like, I didn't even care what the show was when I was told that I was going to get to act with him. And I don't know if he would remember me, but we would hear, you know, have great conversations about acting, you know, where I would mostly listen. And I remember there was this one scene where I think I was getting like a little like tired of like the crew was like not the production team was not like being that great to me. So I was like, I think I was getting a little punchy. And so I was really
a little testy.
There was this one, my last scene of the day.
Pull the Gelman.
My last scene of the day. Wait, what do you mean pull the Gelman? You're going to, like, paint me as somebody who's difficult on set.
He's pulling a Gelman.
No.
They're all saying it on the crew.
I am a very professional person. No, I just was, like, putting it into the acting. And so it was, like, very big. And I remember I was, screaming my line. And Shalhoub walked in and went, bigger. I was not like yelling at him. So I don't do that.
He's great. He has such a great face. Just one of those faces.
Man, he does have such an expressive face.
Yeah. It's great.
The best part, I think, my favorite scene in the whole movie is the last scene. It just is like the whole movie in like a little microcosm.
Where they don't speak?
Where they're just making the eggs and he comes in and they have like a moment. It's just like their whole relationship is that's it right there. They'll like stick they'll stick together through anything. It's
the great Ian Holm.
He's so good
in this, he's excellent. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like, I mean, there's a whole series of these movies that I think it's like a really interesting little thing that tried to happen and I think fizzled out really quickly. And
what do you mean?
I'd like to see more of that. So, because I did a play with Oliver Platt.
Mm-hmm.
And Oliver produces these movies along with Stanley. And I remember this was after both Big Night and Imposters had come out. I think before they did Joe Gould's Secret. But I remember talking to Oliver about this. And it was just like him and Stanley like getting together. It's a bunch of actors, like real. And again, it's that real thing where it's like actors, like,
yeah,
you know, kind of New York guys that are successful but not huge stars. So it's not a huge star project. It's more like an ensemble. And they get together like all of their buddies or yeah, people they've wanted to work yeah, with. And they had this kind of – it's almost like a theater company where they made – so they made this movie Big Night first, and then they made a movie called The Imposters,
mm-hmm,
which doesn't work as well but is interesting and has right, a lot of the same people.
So it's kind of like this ensemble that they're just – well, in this one, yeah, they're going to be the –
yeah, exactly. Cool. And they just yeah, shove – like the funny thing about it – so Big Night is very specific in its structure, and then Imposters is this – is like ridiculous. I mean,
right,
it's sort
like
of
a
like
farce.
It's kind of set in the 50s, and it's about these two actors played by Stanley Tucci and Oliver Platt. And then they somehow, like Alfred Molina is like this big pretentious actor, and they get in a fight with him.
That's great.
And then they wind up on a cruise ship with
yeah,
Alfred Molina, and they're like pretending to be parts of the crew so they don't have to deal with him. But then there's like all these characters, and they wind up just going into cabins on the cruise ship, and they'll be like Allison Janney and who's the guy? Oh, I can't believe I'm forgetting his name. Great character actor.
God, I haven't seen this movie in
who
so
won
long,
the Oscar for that drumming movie, the indie drumming movie.
J.K. Simmons?
Oh. No, the guy who's in – no, sorry. It's a different – it's
the
very, very indie.
Drumming movie.
I know
where,
you mean.
No, he like takes
Richard,
in – he's
Richard
the father
Jenkins?
And stepbrother. Yes,
yeah.
Richard Jenkins. So he Richard Jenkins and Allison Janney
the
are like
father
these –
stepbrothers.
Are like these
– yeah, he is
he's the
father
and stepbrothers, right?
Yeah.
But he's like, they're like, listen, Johnny, like, what are we going to do when we get out of here, Johnny? Like, there's all these little little rooms with all these different characters.
Yeah.
And they just sort of wind up on this boat. And Tony Shalhoub, like, pretends to be the first mate, but he's secretly, like,
he's
some
like a terrorist,
Russian
right?
terrorist
yeah,
who's, like, trying to blow up the boat because he believes in communism. And then at the end, he goes, like, we should all have, like, there should be no individual. We should have one single face. One single face. Why? And it just cuts to all these faces. But it was just this time where, like, these guys were – and then they made this movie called Joe Gold's Secret. But there were these this time when these guys were just, like – it was, like, real indie film, right? Like,
yeah.
This was, like, a real New York indie film. This was
yep,
1996,
yeah,
right?
That mid-90s okay, New York kind of indie
Campbell
scene
Scott, too.
So great.
Yeah. And, like, this was, like, when Parker Posey was,
yep,
like, the queen of, you know, indies.
Yeah.
And you had, like, Campbell Scott and, like, you know, even, like – Liev is
uh-huh,
in it.
He's like an extra in this.
Liev is
yeah, like,
the bouncer at the
get out.
Yeah, he has no lines, I think.
At
get
no,
out.
He doesn't have any
no
lines.
Yeah, he's
no
the
way,
bouncer at Ian Malm's
you know,
restaurant.
Right, I thought that
I think
was
he
him,
lights Isabella Rossellini's cigarette or
in,
something.
In
Big Night.
Get out. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, but he was in.
He's young. He's
like, just, he was in that mid-90s, like with, I don't know if you saw the movie The Day Trippers.
Yeah. Exactly.
It was so
exactly,
fucking great.
That's another one of those. I mean, Anne Mira in that movie.
And isn't Stanley
holy
Tucci
shit,
the lead in that as well?
Yeah,
he's
the,
in
he's
that
the
a
guy
lot,
who's cheating
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah.
The
yeah,
one they
yeah,
go
yeah,
into
yeah,
New York to try
yes,
and bust.
Yes,
but,
yes,
oh, my
yes,
God. Anne Mira in that movie. Talk about a performance.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That movie was great.
Yeah. But no, I it would be great to do that again.
But that's the thing.
That
like they
again,
were kind of throwing together these things. And I remember like talking to Ollie after they did Imposters and him being like, yeah, it didn't really work. And I think the movies didn't make as much money. But it was this like thing that I've always dreamed about a New York being like this place of like truly
mm-hmm,
indie films that don't really work in a, you know.
But just doing it.
But they're just fun and they're interesting and they're different.
But Big Night works artistically.
Yeah, it's sloppy though
yeah,
in a lot of ways.
It made a little money too. I mean, I think it cost
yeah,
$4 million and grossed like 15, which
oh,
is
wow,
great
okay,
for
yeah,
if that's what you're trying
I mean,
to
it's
do.
I mean, it's also just like a simple story, you know what
yeah,
I mean? It's not really
yeah,
complicated. There's no frills
no,
to it. It's just like a
yeah,
real story, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's
and it likes the – it's concise in its sloppiness, I think so. I think it breathes
I, yeah,
a
I
lot.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I think it's deliberate in how it breathes rather than being too messy.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many great scenes in silence, and not just the ending scene, but the introduction to the whole film. And it's one of my favorite things that movies do is when you just set up something so efficiently character-wise in the first 3 or 4 minutes. And you know immediately in this movie when Shalhoub – it's sort of like an old world, new world thing.
Mm-hmm.
Shalhoub is back there. The ingredients matter. Stanley Tucci's straightening the chairs, and then they have this fucking woman smoking a cigarette – complaining about the risotto.
Who is – what's her name? That's such a great actress.
Yeah,
holy shit.
Uh-huh.
What's her name? Who plays that
– I don't know who that
was. I don't know who that was either.
Damn it.
Yeah,
she's great. She plays Woody Allen's sister in Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
Carolyn Arendt? Is that her name?
I mean, okay. But you're so right. It just instantly so sets up the movie.
Yeah, like you know everything you need to know
like
about
everybody's roles. It's just like, I know this whole setup in just 1 second.
She is a Philistine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking criminal.
Yeah.
Criminal. I had an experience that I used to wait tables in East Hampton. I waited a place at Jerry Delfamina, and we had a chef kind of similar to that.
Uh-huh.
It was like, I remember we had soft shell crabs, and he wanted to prepare them medium rare. And when this couple came in, and she wanted them well done, and I was like, I'll have to ask the chef.
Yeah,
and she was like, you know, I just want them well done. Just make them well done. And I was like, okay, excuse me.
You don't know this guy.
Yeah. And I went back and I said, sorry, chef, table 15 would like the soft-shell crabs. Well done. He was like, what? What did you say to me? I was like,
he's mad at you all of a sudden.
Oh, furious. Furious. He was like, these are fresh crabs. These are fresh crabs. What the fuck are you doing? Which table? And he picked up a fucking live soft-shell crab, walked out to the table and threw it at her. And then, like, service stopped, and like, this guy was fucking crazy.
I've seen a lot of
crazy
chefs
stuff go down. And,
yeah,
sous chefs, like, overworked sous chefs, just like,
for
furious.
Sure.
Speaking of cocaine,
exactly.
Oh my God.
I worked at this restaurant in Chicago, and it was like that. You couldn't substitute or change anything on the order.
Yeah.
And it was like, this is the way you're going to have it. You know what I mean? And a bunch of people would come in, tourists from out of town. And you're just the middleman in this shit sandwich. Yeah. Like, there is no good ending for you. You're either, you know, not – they're not happy at you or they're not happy at you. You're just kind of like, fucked.
Well, and the lady in the movie eventually wants spaghetti and meatballs, which they won't even give her that. And Stanley Tucci has that great line, you know, sometimes spaghetti just likes to be alone.
Yeah.
It doesn't come with meatballs?
Yeah.
Sometimes spaghetti just likes to be alone.
Stanley Tucci. Stanley Tucci is – incredible.
Yeah. Just make it.
And I think it's like sometimes it's really like lead characters can suffer from being kind of like being the lead character.
Uh-huh.
And he has such like a specific sort of – he has specific issues.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And problems and kind of hang-ups in the movie. It's not just like he doesn't get kind of stuck by just being the person who is like kind of the leading this movie. You know
right.
I mean?
They must have been going by some sort of Cassavetes model. To some degree.
It's not as messy as Cassavetes, though. Jesus. I mean, but
I feel
that. Yeah, it's, you know, indie character-driven piece.
Right.
Although, you know what? Again, when I say messy, like, for example, I think the messiest thing is, like, I think Minnie Driver's character's terrible. I think it's a terrible character.
The character?
No, yeah, not her performance, but it's a terrible character.
Just
She doesn't do anything.
She's pretty one-dimensional.
She doesn't have any purpose except to be a foil, and he treats her like shit, and she accepts it. Until the end, and she just leaves.
It's great tension with the Isabella Rossellini
right, but
affair.
She doesn't actually serve. There should be some twist, or like she should have agency at some point where she says something to him.
Yeah.
But instead, she just kind of peters out. And I think at the end, she breaks up with him on the beach. Or something.
Yeah.
After she's already known that he's screwing Isabella.
Well, he busts them in the bathroom kissing.
Right.
But you're right. There's little consequence there for her character. Period.
Right. Which, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And so there are like these little story threads that kind of
don't kind of go anywhere.
Right.
But they should have tied that into like the, I don't know, Louis Prima, you know, conceit. Like,
yeah, he
or
drives off
like
with
that,
Minnie Driver.
Or something.
Because
that's kind of, you're right, it's a missed opportunity, especially because, you know, she's good. It's just the fact that the, you know, there really isn't like a full arc necessarily because she doesn't come into use for the plot.
Right. Exactly.
She's an instrument to show where Tucci's character is at.
Yeah. Because he won't sleep with her.
For him to, yeah.
They're in the car making out and he's like, I want everything to be nice. And
right. But then he goes and more has money sex with Isabella Rossellini.
Exactly.
Right.
Which is,
but who wouldn't?
And I mean, it's classically like they're dealing with the art and commerce question, right? Which this all started with, which was basically like Ian Holm, like making spaghetti meatballs for everybody. Like,
and
you know.
The flames at the table.
Yeah, the flames and the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. And that fucking look, because you know, you find out later that Ian Holm knows that Tucci's been having an affair with Rossellini. That
when they're
first
at the table.
Look that Ian Holm gives Tucci in the movie is just like, that's such incredible acting.
Yeah.
If you backtrack.
Wow, I don't remember this.
The anger in his eyes.
Really?
In that opening shot. Yeah, it's great.
Wow.
We were talking about this earlier, the shot where it's like this, where they're talking in the
great.
Why did they frame up like that? Like, why did they? And then he.
Yeah.
And that to brilliant. Me is the kind of shit that's really fun in movies like that. As you get to like take chances like that. Whereas any other movie, they'd be like.
What the fuck are you?
We can't see his face. No, like, get the light out of there.
Yeah, I kind of found, I mean, I'd seen the movie a few times, but today I was distracted by that thinking, because I'd kind of forgotten the gag. I was like, why is that in his eye line? But then I thought character-wise, this is a guy, because he thinks that lamp is so beautiful, would put it in a place where anyone sitting on his couch would, you know.
Have to notice it.
Yeah. His view would be blocked and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And also, like, it makes
his face look like a big old fucking mustache junk or something. I mean, it's like interesting. Like, I don't know that it has specific meaning.
I don't know.
But it has something that makes you think.
Kind of does, because when he knocks it down, it goes from being in his thing to all of a sudden it blocks Stanley Tucci in the reverse.
Yeah, it might have just been a camera gag.
It's kind of like
I feel like it's a power play too.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't see my whole face. And he's also bullshitting him. He's also conning him into humiliation.
Uh-huh.
So – he doesn't want the full truth is not being revealed of this character. So that's who knows? Who knows how much that was? I mean, I'm sure some of that was thought about, right?
There's
had to have been.
Yeah.
Can I tell you my favorite?
I laughed
so hard. I laugh so hard every time I see this when this movie is when he goes into the flower shop.
Oh, dude.
And she tells she tells him she's reading a book or something. That he just has nothing to say. He's walking out and he says, what does he say? Like, what's the deal? Like, what? And
she's
like,
what?
She's like, what? Yeah. And he's like, in the book, what? And she's like, oh.
And she explains the plot of the book.
I thought you were going to say when he stepped into the flower cooler.
No, that's amazing, too. That happens right after that. Yeah.
And she's just so charmed by him, you know.
Yeah.
It's like he steps in the cooler and sweet, like kind of 30-something Allison Janney. So great.
I like that relationship. Again, that's a performance I think that's really difficult to play. Like you have this guy that's like – because you have this guy who's like super hard, right, like about food and artistry. And so you have to believe that that guy would be so smitten
baffled.
And childlike that he would walk into a flower thing. But it is out of his passion for the perfect flower as well, right?
Yeah. I think it's like, romance. It's like – it's all romantic.
Uh-huh.
Life is romantic and he'll die
by
that sword.
Mm.
It is kind of like easy. I can imagine that the roles like him and Ian Holm and like – I could imagine those characters could easily fall into a stereotype. Do you know what I mean? Like the guy, the kind of club owner who's like that. And then his but, you know, I think it just kind of says like a lot about the performances that it feels so genuine on both of their accounts, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those movies where you know as an audience member that pretty early on that Louis Prima is not going to show up.
Yeah.
It's like waiting for Guffman or waiting for Godot.
Yeah,
it's not happening. And it's about
– I mean even the title itself, right?
Yeah. It's the big night.
Right.
And those scenes are just so joyous when they finally – you know, dinner's on and it's such a love letter to food and wine and just being together. And they start dancing and drinking and it's just like you can't help but like smile and like want to be in that room with all these weird – they assemble all these weird people like the food critic and – the flower lady, and they all come there to see Louis Prima, who you know is not going to show up, and it's really pretty great.
And the car salesman.
I like that guy.
Oh, yeah.
I like that
guy. That's Campbell Scott. the actor, yeah. Who's George C. Scott's son.
I did not know who that was.
He was a great actor. He's a funny guy. Yeah. Like he sort of – Hollywood tried to make him a movie star.
With Forever Young.
Dying Young.
Oh, Dying Young.
No, both. No. Oh. He had two.
I know Dying Young was
his first
Julia
two
Roberts.
Movies. Oh, Longtime Companion and Dying Young were his first two films.
Yeah, I'm not familiar
so
at all.
So Dying Young was a movie. Was a movie with Julia Roberts where he had, I think he has cancer or something, and he doesn't want to be in a relationship with her, sort of because he's afraid. Or I think I don't know.
Or she's that's taking care of him, and he's deal. Like difficult,
right?
And then he softens,
but
and then he
they
dies.
They were trying to push him to be a star because he's really good looking, good actor, and then I think that he had the sort of same has the sort of same artistic chip on his shoulder that his father had. Which is like he just sort of didn't – I don't think he wanted to be a star. And he was just like, you know, screw you guys. Like his dad famously was – I think won the Oscar for best actor. And I think that it was like – I forget who called him. Like he was asleep. He didn't go – he doesn't go to the Oscars. And George C. Scott was asleep and someone called him and was like, oh, my God, you just won. He's like, don't wake me up. Like how could you call and wake me up?
Like, that so, is
like,
so
you know,
funny.
He was just a real artist. Guy, I mean, yeah. Just a real like hater of Hollywood, and I think that like
that
they
rubbed
tried
off. Yeah,
to,
yeah.
But
right.
You know, Campbell, like he seems like a real. I mean, he's a really good actor. But yeah, he sort of has had this weird career where,
yeah.
You know, like it's interesting to me that like you would know who he is, right? You know who he is.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but like you wouldn't.
Yeah,
like,
no.
Yeah, he would have completely
kind of missed that.
Singles was kind of his big.
No, Singles.
Oh, yeah, Singles.
Wasn't
yes.
that with like all of them though? Like, wasn't even Ollie Platt in that and stuff or no?
Was Singles Ollie Platt in that? Was Matt Dillon.
Was it
Matt Dillon and Bridget Fonda.
Yep.
Oh, Bridget Fonda.
Kira Sedgwick.
Kira Sedgwick.
It was Cameron Crowe's sort of back when he was Singles. Still doing really great movies.
Wow, yeah, I know, sounds, right?
Yeah, I feel bad.
Singles. Yeah.
No, it's weird.
And like, then like the grunge scene, you know? You
yeah.
Have, like you have Soundgarden.
Yeah,
I'm like watching Soundgarden.
Yeah.
Hey, how's it going? Like, Jesus Christ, folks! It's like, I don't know if these guys are hanging out to this. I get it. It's Seattle. They're in Seattle. But it's like one of those great things about those types of those Cameron Crowe movies of like, you're like, I don't give a shit. The moment's great.
Yeah, no, for sure. He knew how to write a movie moment, for sure.
That's funny. Like, did anybody see that Roadies show?
No.
I never saw that.
I auditioned for it.
I saw like 5 minutes of
he
it.
That was his show, right?
I remember hearing it. I was like, oh, that sounds like kind of
yeah,
a cool
I don't know
perspective.
What happened. Like, because then he made that movie with Legolas.
Lando Bloom.
Yeah,
and, where Emma Stone is Asian.
No. That was the next one.
Oh. No, that was,
there was one
Bradley
with,
Cooper, right?
There was one with what's Orlando Bloom and Kirsten Dunst,
oh,
right?
It was called Elizabethtown.
Town.
Yeah.
Did you see
that? Yeah,
no,
that's right.
No, never saw it.
And then there was the Hawaii movie. And then there was the Hawaii Aloha.
And then We Bought a Zoo.
No, that was
We Bought
not
a
him.
Zoo was before that. Yeah,
no, we Bought a Zoo was
right.
Right?
I auditioned for him for We Bought a Zoo.
Did you audition for one of the animals? Who else is in? It's got to be just a
it's
dude
like Matt
and
Damon
his wife
and his
buying
son,
a zoo.
Right?
Well, like, maybe, who would you be?
At
don't
one
they
point,
say?
They were like, let's have a talking zebra.
Animated.
We who you find out is actually an insane
There's
person.
Like a dream
by
sequence with a rhino.
Like Keith Gelman in here.
It was a big reveal that my character was insane and Matt Damon's character was the stupidest person on earth because he believed that I was a zebra. I thought I was a zebra. He believed I was a zebra.
That would have been a better movie.
And he never even bought a zoo.
No, he never bought a zoo. He bought an outdoors insane asylum, but they didn't tell him because the former owner of the insane asylum had gone insane and thought he was in a zoo too.
What an interesting conceit.
It was a better movie.
I would watch that movie. Totally watch that movie.
Oh, man.
I mean, I don't think you'd have as many heart-wrenching moments, but it'd be like a thriller.
It'd be very...
It'd be like Shutter Island.
You'd just be...
You know,
yeah.
You'd be like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's like the island of Dr. Moreau
yes,
meets Shutter Island.
That's the movie I've been... I want to see that movie.
Just a real head scratcher. I saw The Island of Dr. Moreau in the theater.
That dude
was just
wow. That movie. Crazy. I saw it in the theater too. When yeah. I was young, I was
like
super
during the day.
Excited.
Yeah, yeah, I was too.
Because like Brando.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And I think Val Kilmer.
Val Kilmer.
They tried to out crazy one another on set.
Yeah, and I mean, and also David Thewlis.
Crazy.
Oh yeah, he's in it. But I didn't know who David Thewlis
is. Like the lead. I think I had already seen that Mike Lee movie with him, Naked.
Oh man,
Naked came out before The Island of Dr. Moreau.
I think so, because I think that's how you put David Thewlis in a leading part in a movie with Brando. Is you'd be like, how good was that guy in Naked? Let's put him in this. Yeah. It's going to be amazing.
He can hold his own.
It's got Val Kilmer, Brando, and a bunch of cats running around.
God, that movie is weird.
David Thewlis.
Do you know this movie?
I know of it. I have not. I only know just, it from the
It's unwatchable.
Like one of the legendary train wrecks.
And it also has the smallest person in the world in it, or one of the smallest people in the world.
Isn't it based on some?
It's a book.
It's
H.G. Wells.
Yeah.
It's about.
And there's a documentary about. There's a documentary about the making of it too.
Oh really? Wow.
That's supposedly.
Which is just like how much of a shit show it was.
Yeah, it was
like
a
what
gigantic
happened.
Disaster.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
Wow.
Oh, the animal people are just like, me, father.
Isn't that Brando's last
remember,
movie?
Father.
It's amazing. That deserves a rewatch, actually.
We should watch that tonight.
I think
we should watch that
I think
that
I'm going to go back because even what you're doing right now is
relapse.
Making me feel like.
Father. Like,
it might deserve a reboot.
No, it was like
animal. Talk about we bought a zoo.
It was animal-human performances that made you nauseated.
Yeah.
They were just like – it was like watching stop-motion animation but in real life.
But also part of the thing was that they were dying or something, right? Like wasn't the conceit that he was genetically manipulating a bunch of people, like consigning them to death?
Yeah.
Like it was a dark premise.
Yeah.
I just remember that being part of the disturbing thing was you were watching these like half-animal people but they were also like – like
where's the remake of this movie?
Yeah,
when is that coming down the pipe?
It's, you know,
let's do it.
Matt Damon, Matt Damon,
Cameron Crowe, Matt Damon, and
Emma
Brett
Stone
Gelman.
as every animal,
father,
daddy. You do that so well, dude. You really do that well.
John Frankenheimer directed that. That's crazy.
Wow.
But he stepped in for this other guy.
Oh,
though.
Is it one of those?
Yeah,
gotcha. This like other the Ron Howard in the Han Solo movie sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Trying to clean up the mess.
I guess.
Big night. We bought a big night.
Well, Mark Anthony is weirdly in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
And just doesn't have much to do. It's great that he's in there.
Does he have any lines?
I think he has a line or two at the very end. But
he plays the busboy, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he like friends with them?
I don't know.
Like, he had to have been friends with them. Or maybe he just like – he had probably already been like a music star and kind of wanted to get into acting maybe.
I couldn't remember where he was career-wise in 96.
Okay. And then they're like, be a busboy.
He was great. I honestly think he's
great.
Great
though.
The end scene, he puts all that eggs on his toast.
Yeah,
I thought that was like, oh, that's fair.
No, I mean
nice.
He transforms into that character. Yeah. He is far from who that guy is.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, you kind of get a sense that he and Minnie Driver, because he consoles her at the end and gives her his coat. So, maybe that might be one.
Oh, there you go.
Who knows? Don't feel too bad for her.
I like that end to the Minnie Driver character. Yeah,
I like
that she kind of goes off with Mark Anthony or something, and then she becomes an international music star or something.
Well, and Tucci and Shalhoub have that great scene on the beach at the end, and I don't know if anyone has brothers in here, but. There's something about like this sibling brotherly relationship that like once you know it and then you see it done right on screen, it's hard to see it any other way.
Mm. Yeah, I don't have a brother, but I do know that like one of the things that strikes me so much about the scene, I mean I can only imagine, but the idea that you get in a fist fight or a physical fight with your brother, but you don't want to hurt them because
that's
they're
exactly
your brother,
the thing.
But you want to hurt them.
Uh-huh.
So you just kind of roll around being ineffective.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. No,
that to me is what's so
haymakers.
Charming about it. Yeah. Is like
it's
you hate them
childish,
so much, but you also can't like actually punch them.
Well, and you know, Tucci's he's got all the pressure in the world on him because his brother's the artist. He's trying to keep this business afloat. And they kind of flip at a certain point when Primo becomes a little more like kind of carefree about everything, and he starts having fun at the party on the big night, and then that's when Tucci switches, and he's like incredibly uptight. I just thought it was sort of an interesting like character switch.
Well, Shalhoub always – it's a comment on artist versus business because Shalhoub always has his art and that satisfaction to lean back on.
Yeah.
Whereas Tucci – and that is a constant thing. That cannot be taken away from him. Whereas your business – that can be taken away.
But also what becomes control. And then what becomes so sad is that Ian Holm has been trying to hire both of them.
Yeah.
And Tucci feels like he's trying to hire because of him. And then he realizes you're just the come along for your brother.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I just want your brother. And you know,
well, there's that great exchange at the end. He has such a great takedown when he finds out, you know, he'd made the whole thing up basically to either get them to move away and go back to Italy and get out of his hair or hire them on. And, he says,
like, you'll never have my brother. Or
yeah, you're never going to have my brother, basically. You're nothing. What he has is rare. You're nothing.
Right.
And then Ian Holm, like an equally good burn, says, I'm a businessman. I'm anything I need to be at any time. Tell me, what exactly are you?
Yeah.
And that's the last line in the movie. Yeah, the whole rest of it's played out in silence. You know,
that's the last line in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, they may mutter something in the omelet scene, but. There's really nothing going on there.
Wow. So that's the big thing of it's a in the end study of Tucci's character that it's like, yeah, he's not even a businessman. He's just a completely lost.
Doesn't really have anything to
person.
Offer. Yeah.
Yep. And
there is that scene where Shalhoub is in the barber shop,
right?
And they're talking about Tucci mainly, right? Like they're talking.
Yeah. Well, he's talking about the uncle's place back in Italy,
right?
And like you know that they should go back there.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's concerned about his brother.
Yeah.
Like he's, you know, almost concerned about
his brother. I feel like Tucci, although is like kind of the most put together, he definitely seems like he's got like the biggest, you know, burden on his shoulders.
Yeah.
He seems kind of like the most
he's a
likely to spin out. You know?
Well, and he's shielding his brother because it has that great smash cut at the beginning. He leaves the bank knowing and the whole audience knows like they're done for unless they can make some money. And it smash cuts to Shalhoub. At the table with the guy paying with the painting and saying, I wish I could pay. And he's like, what would I do with the money?
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, man.
Put it with the other ones.
You need it so bad. Yeah, put it with the other paintings.
Yeah.
So great.
That bank scene, too, that's a guy that I know from New York. The banker guy is Peter McRobbie, who I also did Brokeback Mountain with.
That's a great actor, that guy.
And I also did a play called The Invention of Love with in New York. That guy is a great, like, character guy. I love that scene too because he's like, does he come in? He's like, oh, renovations. Yes, it's the problem, man. It's a big headache. Okay, I'm gonna stop you right now.
So cold.
Yeah,
it's like I will not be charmed.
Yeah, I see what
Italian
you're doing.
Man. Yeah,
right. Pain in the neck.
So sad. It's such a sad film all at once. Joyous because they do have this great night, and you see what that restaurant could have been. But you know, they opened across the street from. The Italian TGI Fridays, basically, that was always going to win.
The moment with the timpano, is that what it's called?
Yeah, man.
Great moment.
When they make that.
They're just like staring.
I was so hungry watching that. I was like, I want to fry.
I was thinking about it right now.
I have no idea what that thing was.
It was
like,
crazy.
It just had like eggs and sausage.
It was beautiful.
And all of them like, not yet.
At
the table.
Still hot.
Okay.
It was so cool though because they – I mean, the business fails, but they had their night, and everyone that said something to them said that was the best meal I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it was just so gratifying. It's just such a love letter to food.
Yeah.
You can't help but want to eat after you've seen this thing.
Mm. I like how Tucci is also – makes me think like the background of the story is like he's the younger brother. I like how, you know, you think of
Primo
like
and Secundo.
Yeah, you think Shalhoub is like he's like this big brother who's really talented and is like this master in the kitchen. He's just trying to like keep up and play some part in this other guy's thing. And maybe his like greatest insecurity is the fact that he has nothing to bring and give.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what's revealed at the end of the movie is that what really is your place in all of this is just like, fuck. You know, but great. You know, I think
it's cool that they made indies like this. I feel like, I mean, I hate the term mumblecore, but it that was such a thing that I feel like, I mean, who was making independent films these days set in the 50s on the Jersey Shore about two immigrant Italian brothers and their restaurant, you know? Yeah, it's like in the mid-90s, I felt like there was a lot of that stuff going on.
Yeah, it just wasn't mumblecore, though. It cared about acting and...
Well, there was just a broader filmmaking concept of what reality could be, I feel like, right? Like,
it doesn't have to just be like this. Like,
yeah, like you actually had movies like even like, do you remember The House of Yes?
Oh, yeah.
That's based on a play.
Great.
It's like Parker Posey and Josh Hamilton. It's just broad and like big. And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I feel like a lot of things, like we don't take those type of chance. Again, it's the thing about taking risks and taking chances. Like we do broadness, but we do it in such a comedic way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That it becomes like the broad thing that can still be a movie is a sort of lost art form that I kind of miss.
Well, it's people aren't educating themselves on the difference of tone anymore and
what do you
playing
mean?
A tone.
You mean
I think that people either think of things in terms of like this gigantic broadness or a naturalism.
So the broadness is like Saturday Night Live or like the naturalism is just
Winter's
anything
Bone,
that's like
yeah.
Right. They deny any level of theatricality as having value and don't enter to that. I think like that's also because of a separation from the theater, and I think that film way more.
But I also think that
to theater.
And again, it's business. Like I think there is a distinction between comedy and drama that's like clearer and clearer. Like there's the McKay kind of crazy comedy, McKay Farrell Will comedy thing, and then there's like the drama thing.
Well, that guy's doing a pretty good job though of trying to, because he's doing movies now that are like, you know.
Yeah, but I think that he's not. I think that even when McKay does the drama stuff, it becomes a very different entity.
Yeah.
Like I think he's doing a drama thing, but it's not like he's bringing over like Will Ferrell or what. You know what I mean? Like it's a totally different.
It's a separate sort of part of the business.
And I think these modes could benefit a lot from each other.
Totally.
Like I think that the broad comedies invested with a lot of stakes and a lot of acting could be really interesting. And I think that the more dramas with people like Brett Gelman, who are primarily comedic actors. I'm playing on the neurosis.
I know you are.
Okay, good.
What about like The Birdcage? Like a movie like The Birdcage incorporating kind of these, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
I guess that is kind of like a farce, but it's still like there's like serious acting and stakes.
But even watching like Monty Python, like those guys are like, I don't know, there's something about that feels to me like really like acting. The Flying Circus stuff at least. Like even though it's sketch and stuff, I just feel like there are stakes there that is a...
And then there's comedic performers who aren't good at – like I like watching Steve Martin on screen before he started committing more to quote-unquote good acting, you know?
Yeah.
Like Father of the Bride?
You mean like The Jerk and like stuff
like
that?
Oh, back when he was more –
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Before he read the Mammoth book, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
Man with Two Brains. That was a good one. This would make a great stage play actually. When I was watching Big Night, I was like, man, this – if you just tweak a couple of scenes, locations, this would be fantastic.
Make
on
a great
stage.
TV show too. Let's adapt it. Oh shit!
Yeah, 8-episode miniseries.
Anyway,
Big
have
night.
We been doing this for
we
4 hours?
No, we'll finish up, guys.
We bought a Big Night.
We finish up with a segment called Five Questions. You can be short in your answers.
Okay. Right.
We'll just go around the room.
Nice.
First movie you saw in a theater.
Wow.
Brett?
God.
Wow.
First movie I saw
a
in a theater.
Good question.
I think.
This is hard.
The one I remember, I think. What came out first, the Muppet movie or E.T.?
Jesus. So E.T. was
84 or 83.
Yeah, that's a good question. I have no idea.
It was either Muppet movie or E.T., I think.
Wow.
That I remember.
You saw a Muppet movie in the theater.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so
cool.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I don't
you were alive.
I know, but I didn't see it in the theater. I don't know why.
Yeah, Raiders.
The movies that, well, yeah.
We just saw it the other night.
I saw Raiders, I think, like 13 or 14 times in a movie theater. When did Raiders come out? It was like 87 or something?
No. Raiders.
No, it was like between Empire and Jedi that Raiders
came out,
I think.
Was it?
Yeah, I think he did it between those two movies for sure.
This
really?
Is a segment called Listeners Screaming Into Their Cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
82!
I know.
Was it really 82? Okay,
Calm down, everybody.
Well, here's the thing. So I saw that movie a ton of times there. So that would have been before Jedi came out?
I know I was in like the fourth or fifth grade when Raiders came out, and that would have been 82 or 83.
What were your guys's?
But see, my thing is I sort of remember – well, I remember – okay, so it would have been either Raiders or it would have been – I remember going to Return of the Jedi and missing the first Jabba the Hutt sequence.
I think I missed
and,
the
and my friends – and then I went to school the next
How
day.
How late were you?
I was like 25, 30 minutes late. So for me, the movie started. And my friends were all like, oh, wasn't that part amazing? And I was like, oh, I missed a couple minutes in the beginning. And they were like, you missed that part with Jabba the Hutt and Han Solo. That was the best part of the movie. And I was humiliated.
So what do you got?
81.
Raiders?
Raiders with 81. Whoa. All right, I saw that movie in the theater a bunch of times because my grandma liked the air conditioning. So it would have had to have been Raiders.
All right. Yeah, I guess it had to be Raiders for me. That was before E.T.?
Yeah, E.T. I think definitely it was after that. Because he did – didn't he do the – what's the Belushi movie?
1941.
And then Raiders straight to Raiders. Because like, they also used to do this thing where they would re-release things.
Well, that's true.
Like did Raiders get like a re-release maybe like oh, 2 years later or something?
They could probably just – people
I feel like that
couldn't you – what was the – what I mean I guess in that time you couldn't like go out and buy – could you go out and buy Raiders? I mean,
no,
VHS.
There was no
VHS. So they'd have to re-release to go see it again.
Was there? When does like Blockbuster come in? Like, not Blockbuster, but like, when do video stores and VHSs come in?
I mean, I feel like that was still Laserdisc territory.
Yeah, exactly.
Like pre-VHS.
Real aficionados and stuff. Yeah. Like real crazy people. Yeah, I. Yeah.
All right, Joe. First movie.
I think mine's gonna really date me, but I'm pretty sure it was Lion King.
Okay.
Wow.
Fair enough.
When I was a little kid. I remember I saw it with my mom, and my mom just tells me the story about when Mufasa dies, just me crying for like the whole movie.
Yeah.
It's just fucking sad. That's really so sad.
All those movies are. First R-rated movie you saw.
Fired. R-rated movie?
Yeah. Do you remember?
Wow. Maybe.
I don't know.
Some people don't remember, and some people it's very impactful.
Yeah, I remember – I don't know if it was an R – Minority Report isn't rated R, but I remember seeing that at a friend's birthday party and being like, that was so messed up.
Like
with the eyes, him replacing his eyes.
Oh, yeah.
I think I remember the first like drama I saw though, which was like, I'm going to see a drama. I think it was My Left Foot.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I remember the first movie – this is R. I mean, I don't know what R is, but I remember the first movie I saw boobs in. That was a Kentucky Fried Movie.
Yeah.
Do you remember this movie?
Mm-hmm. It was like a sketch movie, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was like a terrible sketch movie that my friends and I had a copy of when we were like 12 or 13 or something. We were like super excited.
First boobs.
Like naked ladies in it.
Yeah. I should change the question up and make it first boobs.
Or first drama. Yeah. My Left Foot.
I mean, I'm sure I saw dramas, but well, I remember
you
this
like
one time though.
Were you 12 years old when you saw My Left Foot?
Yeah, well, the first, but before that, we went and saw King David, which was like Richard Gere
as
David.
I remember that
as like the Jewish King David.
Yeah, and I went with my mother and my father and my sister and my grandpa and grandma. And we went and saw, and there were so many heads being cut off, and I was like a little kid, and my sister was there too, and we were like, "Oh God, this is terrible!" So we left, and then we snuck into Johnny Dangerously,
such a great movie,
which was one of the best,
love it, man,
best theatrical experiences I've ever had. And I remember just like listening to my grandparents laugh so hard, and I didn't even understand it, but like the way in which they were laughing.
It was like a deep, deep,
the great Michael Keaton.
That's right. Great Piscopo.
Joe Piscopo, the
Joe
main villain.
Joe Piscopo. Wow.
I remember seeing Wise Guys in the theater, thinking of a like sleeper Brian De Palma movie with DeVito and Piscopo.
That's right.
Piscopo. Was that before all the weightlifting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pre-
Him and Carrot Top. Yeah,
that's a weird move.
It's just like you're a comedian.
Well, Chappelle, too.
You're on
Chappelle
SNL, then you just get jacked.
Yeah.
Chappelle's
like
not
he's
jacked.
In the
he's
gym.
Like normal.
It's not like he's
roided.
It's
not like, it's not like the Carrot Top stuff. Yeah.
Do you guys remember R-rated? Or did you say one?
Yeah, I don't remember R-rated. I feel like it was like War of the Roses.
I don't know, but that's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, yeah, I like that. I remember seeing that when I was young.
Braveheart, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, that was totally R. Will you guys walk out of a bad movie?
Will we?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah?
Of course.
Oh, my God.
Any you care to mention? Or You don't have to.
Oh, God. I feel like every
barbed
5 minutes.
Barbed wire.
Pam Anderson?
Yeah.
Why did you walk into that movie?
I don't know. I think because I was the most bored person on the planet Earth. I don't remember. I walked out of that. I mean, there's definitely like, yeah.
I actually have very little patience for movies. I think I really
– for being good or not?
Yeah, like if I'm not – that invested, I'll just leave. Yeah.
I walked out of Beverly Hills Ninja.
What was that?
Chris Farley, which I feel like disrespectful because
no,
I love.
It was probably a terrible movie.
Oh, you love bad. Him? I mean, I love him. Yeah, I loved him.
Yeah, whatever.
But you know,
good people make bad movies.
He died.
Yeah, but not because he walked out.
No, I know.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, number four. I will tailor it to the guests. So, Joe, favorite guitar or dream guitar?
Probably the one that I have, Gretsch right. Corvette, 1971. It's like a hard body maple guitar.
So you own your dream guitar.
I do. I don't need another one.
That's great.
Yeah.
Mr. Harbor, dream stage role.
We've talked about it. Brett Gelman playing it with Coriolanus.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah. Have
totally. You played that role?
No. It's one that I've never played. I played like a bunch of Shakespeare characters. I did like 16 when I was in college. I worked at a theater in Maine. We used to do 4 Shakespeare's and floating rep. I did that for 4 years. So I did 16 Shakespeare roles there. I've done Amazing. Shakespeare in the Park a bunch of times. So I played like Hamlet, you know. I've played just tons and tons of roles in Shakespeare. But Coriolanus is one that so rarely gets done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to convince the public. Last time they did it, the public was in the early 80s with Stephen Burkoff directing, and it was Chris Walken as Coriolanus and Keith
amazing?
David as
I
Alphidius.
Saw him in Shakespeare in the Park. Walken, it was the only time I've ever been to Shakespeare in the Park. It was when they did The Seagull that year where it was Walken and Natalie Portman and Meryl Streep and Phil Hoffman.
Jesus.
And, Mike Nichols directed.
God, who else was it? They were
like, see it?
Oh, yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah.
I wanted to see it. I never.
Was it good?
Yeah.
What, The Seagull?
I mean, like, well, they're, like, technically super proficient.
Kevin Kline?
Like, it wasn't, yeah.
Kevin he was Kline. In it?
Again, it's this thing where it's, like, I feel like with shows like that, it's almost like the most photographed barn in America. It's, like, at a certain point, you can't see the barn anymore.
Yeah.
Like, so it's, like, it was good. I didn't have an experience. Like, sometimes I walk into plays and I'm, like, but it was like you were like, oh man, these guys are great. They're like doing Seagull. Seagull's great.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't one of those. It was like
light
electric.
It up.
I saw my first Shakespeare I saw in the park was Chris Walken and Raoul Julia do Othello.
Oh my God!
I was 13 years old, and I went down, waited in line with, and like I remember like. Chris Walken's like amazing, but he's completely psychotic. And you know Iago in that play. Like all they do is say, honest, honest Iago. And I'm like, I would not trust that guy.
Right. I just saw Mark Rylance do it.
Oh, I bet that's amazing. But anyway, Raoul Julia, I remember, was like kind of terrible.
Really?
Like in a huge way. In this way that like only great actors can be terrible. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like you have to be great to be that bad. Like he was so big and like trying so many things. Raoul Julia is like one of my favorite actors as well. Like Moon Over Parador.
Oh.
That performance in Moon Over Parador is
incredible.
Insane.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would love to do Coriolanus. So Coriolanus.
All right, Brett, I was going to go with something comedy for you, but...
No, you can.
How about drama? Like, what famous dramatic film would you have loved to have played the main role in?
Ooh.
Oh, my God.
That's a good one.
That's quite of a...
We Bought a Zoo.
We Bought a Zoo.
Downsizing.
As a zebra. The original script. I think... I guess I would pick Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, wow.
That would be a big pick for me. But that's another one. He's very funny in that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
He's
one of the funniest.
Yeah.
He's definitely – you know, Nicholson in that or I think like – yeah, I'll go with that.
Solid pick.
Yeah.
And then finally, dudes, movie going 101, when you go to the movies, what's your routine? Where do you sit? What do you eat?
I have an anxiety attack about people talking or being on their phones mm-hmm. during the movie. I immediately start scoping the audience.
You get pre-angry?
I get pre-rage
yeah.
when I'm in a theater of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
It drives me insane
yeah.
that people don't know how to be audience members.
So you're sitting there pre-angry?
So that's my routine.
All right.
So it's me breathing, trying to calm down and be like, okay, like don't – it's not worth a confrontation. Let's not say anything and yeah.
I don't have that in movies but in live theater plays. Like I get crazy about –
I mean beyond – that's beyond. I will get confrontation.
I mean I'll even yeah. get – like even family members or like girlfriends or friends. I'll just be like – you know, they'll be like yeah. getting ready.
You're all like,
you got to turn it off. yeah. To the point, they'll be like, yeah. I'm
well, in no, the no, theater no, in New York, though, at least you've got everybody on your side.
Yeah, it's true.
On there,
it's
you
true.
Know.
Were you going to ask me my favorite comedy role that I would have wanted to do?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, give us that.
Do you have one?
Well.
Yeah, I would say
Blazing Saddles.
No, I would say Max Bialystock and the Producers,
okay,
or Frederick Frankenstein in yeah. Young Frankenstein.
Yeah,
Joe could be. Your producing
yeah, Leo
partner.
Bloom. Yeah, yeah, you could be.
You could totally. You guys could totally do that. I'll produce that
stage.
No, I would say zero.
All right, that's great. What about you guys in the
movie
movies?
Routine?
Movie routine.
I guess I don't really have a routine necessarily. I don't know. Drinking water, eating a little popcorn, maybe.
I got a night out with Joe. Yeah. So fun.
Very simple and very clean.
Very simple Amish way to watch a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. We went to the movies. We saw Raiders yeah. rescreened here in Atlanta.
Oh.
Joe and I went together.
At the Fox?
Joe picked me up at the – where was yeah. it? At the Midtown?
Yeah. David – I texted David and David was like, oh, yeah, sure, come over. And then he heard
– He's like stalking me outside.
I was like walking.
My yeah. But
it was great.
We went, but yeah, I bought like chicken fingers and M&M peanuts, and Joe like graciously had a couple M&Ms, but I could tell it just killed you. I didn't understand.
Didn't
I was like, come on, man, let's you know,
let's indulge, let's
yeah,
watch Raiders.
You were like, I'm just here to watch a movie.
I didn't want to steal all his M&Ms.
You're very Spartan. No, I do like popcorn.
That's what I'll get on.
I like eating crap during a movie.
Yeah.
I like to sit relatively in the back. I don't like to be up too close. I just have a big thing about being on time.
Yeah.
Maybe it's from
Definitely.
That traumatic experience with Return of the Jedi or something.
Yeah.
But like airports, movies, and plays.
Yeah.
Like I am
yeah.
there a
Same
half
here.
Hour before. And I'm like ready to go and get
right.
our seats. And if you're running late, it's just yeah. not okay.
If I'm yeah. like watching a movie at home and somebody's like talking to me during the movie and the movie's playing, I just have no – I have to pause it
yeah.
and say, okay, what's going on? And just to – because I cannot be – I'm like watching this thing.
Right.
Or falling asleep. I really can't put on movies and fall asleep because I just watch them. I'm like interested in watching the movie. So
yeah.
if I'm trying to like fall asleep and – I got to put on something.
You know what I do like to do, though, and this is a bad thing for audience members and for everything, is when it's a bad movie and I'm with a friend, I do like to make jokes. Like constantly.
Yeah.
With
no,
him.
Sure.
I like to be
I'll
like,
do it, too.
Oh, yeah. yeah, but he's like a real.
Yeah, no, well, I'm a hypocrite.
You know, I mean, like,
yeah.
oh, yeah, he seems like a real scoundrel. Uh-huh. Whatever,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
But like.
Yeah, if I don't like it, then I'll really
yeah,
rip it.
I'll be a hypocrite and yeah. talk.
They haven't earned
asshole.
Your respect.
Oh, no, I'm a total.
Yeah, I've actually had people shush me.
Yeah,
like,
no,
oh.
I'm the.
Like, yeah, it's bad. That's so humiliating, too.
Like,
because the adrenaline in your body goes like, fight this.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you go like, they're absolutely right.
Yeah, and there's some mom with her
I'm being a jerk.
Yeah, it's like some mom with her kids is like, "Hey, sir, can
yeah.
you quiet down?
Exactly.
My children are yeah."
Yeah, or if you get busted cursing too loud, that's the worst in front of children.
Yeah,
yeah. Anyway, thank you, my friend.
I think we did it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
When is season 3 dropping?
Never.
Do you know yet?
Never coming out.
Yeah, sometime next summer or something like that.
All right.
I think sometime next year. I don't know. They haven't really announced the date. But
gotcha.
Yeah.
So we're still shooting. How's that?
That's great.
We're still heavy in the midst of it.
It's happening. Man.
It's happening.
Yeah.
It's going to be – I will say, though, it'll be worth the wait. This season, the scripts have been better than anything we've ever done.
Well, season 2 is better than season 1.
Yeah.
It's just like
But this is like
beyond.
Season 3
I mean,
is
it's
like,
so crazy
that's awesome.
Now. That like yeah. the imagination is so huge on these guys.
Yeah,
and, like,
it's really
the stuff
amazing
that we get to do is like so
the vision
fun.
Of the brothers.
I mean, if you like Spielberg,
Yeah.
Like, this is, to me, this is more Spielberg almost than Spielberg at this point. Yeah. Like, it's more, because it is an homage to a 10-year period, I think, in Spielberg's life.
Right.
And it's just,
it just
so,
packs such a punch, I think. You know what I mean? There's so many. It's pretty rich.
And it's also, we get to do 8 hours of it as opposed to just a 2-hour movie.
Yeah, it's fun.
We get to do
fun.
8 hours. It's so huge,
and it's,
this year, too.
I think it's a lot more comedic.
Oh, I wish I could
honestly
talk about it. Yeah, yeah. I wish we could talk about it. It's so good.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All
thanks,
right,
buddy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, everyone. That wraps up our official first Stranger Things special. I'm going to do some more of these. I'm going to get some of the cast and crew in here. My buddy Craig Johnson is in the art department there and works in with props. And his lovely wife, Karen Freed, also a good friend, she works in the wardrobe department. And they both, it's very cute, isn't it? A couple married working on the Stranger Things crew together. I love it. They also worked on the Stuff You Should Know TV show. That's how I got to know both of them. They're great. I'm going to get each one of them in here separately to get a crew's perspective and on Stranger Things, and maybe I can get another cast member in here, and I can end up having my series of Stranger Things specials just like I wanted to from the beginning. So I hope you enjoyed this one. Those guys were great. Great, great talk about Big Night, a movie that if you have not seen, I hope you go out and see it. It's really, really worth your time. So I hope you dug this, and thanks a lot for tuning in. And until next week, if you haven't checked out Stranger Things, just go binge it, man. Go do it. It's out there. Get yourself ready for season 3. Movie Crush is produced, engineered, edited, and soundtracked by Noel Brown and Ramsey Yunt at HowStuffWorks Studios, Ponce City Market, Atlanta, Georgia.